Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On this edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad, we catch up with former Magic point guard and NC State legend, Chris Corciani. He spent three seasons in the NBA, two of them with the Orlando Magic. And 4 years at NC State, he was the all-time NCAA assist leader when he graduated and led the nation in assists in the 90-91 season. Went on to play eight seasons overseas. We get into his time in Orlando, his relationship with Jeff Turner and Scott Skiles, a couple of big games that he got in and big moments that he had as a member of the Orlando Magic. And then he played for legendary Jim Valvano at NC State, and he touches on some of his memories there as a member of the Wolfpack. And his time overseas, his travels, and the point guard position now, how much it has changed since he manned that position in the late 80s and early 90s. So much to get to with Chris Corciani. And, of course, remember on Pod Squad, the Florida Department of Transportation reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. If you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Instead, find a sober driver or catch a ride service. Remember, drive sober or get pulled over. Have a great night and drive safe. Terrific memories as we catch up with Chris Corciani on Magic Pod Squad.
This is Jalen Suggs of the Orlando Magic.
This is Jonathan Isaac.
This is Mo Bamba.
This is Cole Anthony.
This is Franz Wagner of the Orlando Magic, and this is the Pod Squad.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad. Dante Marcatelli, George Galante, David Steele, and Jeff Turner. And we are pleased to be joined by former Magic point guard Chris Corciani. Kind enough to join us, three NBA seasons, eight seasons overseas, an NC State legend. But most importantly, Chris, George Galante and myself are just more excited to have a fellow Paisan on the show.
I love it.
That was the first thing my wife said to me this morning, Dante. She said, who are we having on the Pod Squad? I said, yes. Chris Corciani. She goes, ooh, an Italian. And I went, that's right.
That's awesome. We're excited to catch up with you. I know Magic fans are as well, but I guess, Chris, just kind of take us back to your time here in Orlando, that year and a half, 91, 92, that you were here. Some special memories for you. Love to hear your thoughts on kind of your first couple of years here.
Yeah, though it was short, it was very memorable. And I was drafted in the second round, the 36th pick, and I knew it was going to be difficult. They had three point guards that were all fully guaranteed, Moreland Wiley, Scott Skiles, and Sam Vincent. And I went to training camp, and to be honest with you, I had a horrible training camp. Everything was moving so fast. And I try to tell people, when you go from middle school to high school and high school to college, and until the game slows down, it's difficult. And I just didn't play well in preseason. And I remember Matty Gukas calling me in and saying, listen, I appreciate all your effort and everything you did, but we're going to have to let you go. And at that point, I stopped and I said, Coach Gukas, what do I have to do in order to play in this league? You know, give me some insight. I really want to work hard. And he told me, he said, you know, no one that I've ever released has kind of taken that approach. You know, boy, you know, he gave me a long list of things. You're too slow. You can't shoot. You know, but
That doesn't sound like Matty at all.
Not at all.
I played for him for 4 years, and he said the same thing to me.
Well, Jeff, you were slow, but you could shoot, though. That's the difference.
Yeah, I had, guess you're right.
I had two strikes against me.
6'9" helped too.
Yeah, that's exactly. True. So So I went back and I played with the Raleigh Bullfrogs. It was a minor league team, and you know, really was enjoying it and had a good time. And then all of a sudden, it was funny. I got a phone call from my agent, and he said, "Listen, you know, you're being called up by the Orlando Magic, and not only are you being called up, you're going to start your first NBA game." And I honestly thought it was a prank. I was like, "This can't be true." So I ended up flying out to Denver, and I met the team out there. And I remember getting off the plane and I had to go right to McNichols Arena. And when I got there, they didn't tell me where to go. So I try to go in the front door where all the fans are trying to get in. And all of a sudden they're saying, "Listen, there's this short little guy. He says he's playing in the game tonight. We need to get security down here. This guy's nuts." And so I finally got in, and you know, they said, "Listen, we're just going to run a couple plays. We're going to go pick and roll here and, you know, throw the ball to the wing and bury yourself in a corner." So ended up starting my first NBA game. My only start of my career was my first game. And it was just a wonderful experience. From there forward, you know, I had great mentors, you know, Jeff and Scott, Mark Akers. You know, it was really, really fun when you had veterans take you underneath the wing. And it was a very, very wonderful experience for me.
Chris, can I step in here? Because, you know, two guys on this
stage, right?
I got to set the stage. I mean, this, because, you know, this is my 33rd year. Chris Cortegiani, what he did that day, you know, there's probably 2,500 games I've done. There's maybe 15 that I remember. I mean, really remember. And right. This is one of them because of what Chris was just talking about. It's just vivid memories. The team was beat up, had, I think, 7 available players because of all the injuries. The week before Chris signed, the team signed Stephen Thompson, who played, I think, one game for the Magic and then was gone, and Anthony Bowie, who wound up having a really nice career in Orlando. And that was just to have 8 guys available. And then they had released Moreland Wiley. So Skiles and Vincent were both injured, and they bring Chris in. And, you know, I knew Chris from Hialeah, Miami Lakes. Dante, you didn't mention he's 2-time Mr. Basketball in high school in the state of Florida.
That's right,
one of the best high school players in the history of the state of Florida. So I knew about Chris because I had been at Florida. Norm Sloan tried to recruit him. And I've heard Norm's stories, you know, about how close he came, and you can verify that or not. Getting Chris Cortegiani, but I knew all about Chris. So he comes in, and in this game, we had lost 15 straight. All right. So we're looking at setting an NBA record for the most consecutive losses because we got 7 or 8 guys. Now we got Chris coming in who hasn't played an NBA game, and he's in our starting lineup, and it doesn't look very good. Well, this game in Denver, we're right there at the end. Do you remember this, Chris and Jeff? When you were at the free throw line, JT, we were down 4. You made a free throw to cut it to 3, and then you intentionally missed the second free throw. Somehow the ball got kicked out to Chris. Chris, do you remember this at the top of the arc? You shot a ball, and I thought it was a 3. I remember broadcasting. I thought the game was tied, but your toe was on the line.
Oh, no kidding.
Only gave him 2, and we lost the game by, I think they hit an, oh, by the way, free throw at the end, but. You know, it was a memorable game. It was a memorable scenario. Chris almost hit the shot in his first game
that would
have sent it to overtime. JT, you played all 48 minutes. I looked that up. You never came out of that game.
He didn't foul out. Think,
did not foul out. It was a really nice game.
That's nice.
Way to go, JT. Awesome.
It's just,
when there's only so many players, right, and you know they can't take you out, you're not taking any of those hard fouls you would normally take, right? Now you're big time, right?
Jeff was a smart player. He knew he was getting a lot of minutes, which means he was going to get a lot of shots. So
that's right.
No silly fouls. But it's funny, David. As I've gotten older, my memory, I don't remember anything. But I vividly remember that game and late in the game, kind of making it and saying, "Oh my gosh," you know, and then only getting the 2 because my foot was on the line.
David, my recollection, David, though, is had Anthony Bowie and Stevie Thompson had not played in a game, right? That was their first game as
I think you're right.
Yeah. So think about that, guys. We've got three guys coming in that really had not played for us. And they were part of the eight. One thing, Chris, that I remember is you talked about, we're just going to keep it, you know, Maddie said, we'll keep it simple and we'll run some things. I remember at the shoot around, after we had gone through our stuff and everything, you and I stayed a little bit longer. And I think Skiles was there too. And just talking about, you know, wing pick and roll, you know, Skiles, you know, taking us through it. JT's going to set the screen. Here's what you're looking for coming off. And we just did that over and over and over. And, you know, that was one of our, that's one of the things that we ran. It's just pick and pop, not pick and roll. It's JT we're talking about. I don't roll.
It didn't take me long to realize you weren't rolling to the bucket.
Now, you mentioned Skiles being a good mentor. I would think Skiles could, as knowledgeable as he is, I would think he could be hard on younger guys too. But was there a balance? What was it like learning from Skiles and also getting to know him?
I didn't know what to expect. I always had a great respect for Scott, you know, when he was in college and in the NBA. And he was actually one of my favorite players prior to even getting to the Magic. And when I got there, I didn't know what to expect. And he really took me under his wing. And he helped me and mentored me. And, you know, he was a real student of the game. I mean, he would tell me tendencies of all the players. And I was impressed with how smart and how much work he did off the court in order to prepare. But, you know, he was so very helpful. You know, just, you know, I don't think he was threatened by me, which is a good thing. So he was just always there. Trying to give me a hand.
Chris, what made the game finally slow down for you? You said that was a big problem when you first, you know, got to camp and so forth. What made the game finally start to slow down for you and you to feel comfortable?
You know, I ended up settling into a nice role. And that's the one thing, you know, when I think of Matty Kuchus is, you know, I played in every game that I ever dressed with the Magic, but I knew I was only going to play, you know, 8 to 15 minutes a game. And I had a role. You know, when I went in, I tried to pick up and create tempo. And I think they kept things very simple for me. And, you know, that's what kind of slowed the game down. And I knew exactly what I was going to do each night. You know, I wasn't going to play 30 minutes and they weren't looking for me to, you know, come in and score. It was more really playing to my strengths. And, you know, like I said, it was good. We had a good little run there for a while and very enjoyable.
Yeah, you so got good. In that game that we broke that broke the losing streak. You played in that game at Seattle, I recall. I think Vincent was back because Sam basically won the game for us to break the 17-game losing streak. I think he shot 18 free throws that night, but you were there for that one as well a couple of nights later.
Yeah, there was a number of games that kind of come to mind. And I remember, I think it may have been in my second year when the Orlando Magic, I don't believe had ever beaten the Chicago Bulls in Chicago. And we went there and I remember late in that game, I hadn't played a whole lot. And I got put in the fourth quarter and it was tie score with about 20 seconds to go. And for whatever reason, I was in the game and with about 8 seconds, the ball ended up in my hands and I drove to the bucket and I got fouled with 3 seconds. And it was tie score. And I stepped up and made both free throws to go up two. And I remember, you know, they called a timeout. And I was like, please let the game end just like this. I know my career is not going to be long, but this will be something special to hang my hat on. And I remember the ball came in to Scottie Pippen. And he shot, a desperation shot right around half court. And to me, the ball took about a day and a half to get there, and I was just praying all the way along, and it kind of ricocheted off, and that was the first time that I believe the Magic had ever won, you know, in Chicago. So that was a fun night as well.
I was gonna say, Dante and George, just for I guess context, Chris, Yeah, our new coaching staff, led by Jamal Mosley, they have a bell in the practice facility, and they ring that bell when guys make winning plays, taking charges, you know, the extra pass, just, you know, those hustle plays and everything. So just for, you know, for Dante and George, if Chris was on the team, if we had a bell back then, it would be ringing quite a bit. You know, that's nonstop ringing because that's just, you know, that's just the way he played. He, you know, he made those kind of plays. So,
yeah, well, I appreciate that, Jeff. That, you know, again, you know, knowing your talents and what you're capable of doing, you know, I just tried to do whatever I could to help the team win. And a lot of times that was just hustling and trying to take a charge and knowing not to take up any shots for the other four guys out there.
Now, Chris, you're very, very humble. He, you know, he had over 1,000 assists. He's, yeah. he's talking like he's
right. Yeah. He was the
NCAA leader in assists right. when he left North Carolina State. So it's okay, Chris, to be humble there. We appreciate that, but you were a terrific, terrific basketball player. And then, after the NBA, you spent 8 years in Europe and had a really nice career overseas. You and your wife traveled and saw the world, and that must have been a great experience too.
It really was. You know, I spent 3 years in Italy, 3 in Spain, 1 in Germany, and 1 in Turkey. In Turkey, we ended up adopting a street kid that lived there. He was 10 years old, and all we did was work in what they call a buffet. It's like a little store downstairs. And we got to know him, and he didn't go to school or didn't do anything. And we adopted him. So I went over there for 8 years and played and brought back a kid with me. So
don't gloss over that either, because I was going to bring that up. I had read the story about it. How does that come about? How does that has to be a long conversation between you and your wife and obviously him.
It was interesting. He was a kid that didn't speak any English and worked every day. I mean, wore the same clothes every day. And he had a family, but they had put up 2 of their other kids for adoption. They just had, you know, they weren't in a very good financial position. And the goal was to take him with us to Italy the following year. And we were going to teach him English for 3 months. And then he could go back to Turkey and get a much better job, you know, being bilingual. And after 3 months, you know, he didn't want to leave. And I said, listen, I signed up for the 3 months. I didn't sign up for the long-term deal, but I lost that battle, and we ended up adopting him. He stayed with us overseas. We put him through, you know, school while we were there. And now he's back in Raleigh and doing well.
That's an amazing, amazing story.
That's a great story.
Really, really good story. Now your sons too, they are playing college or have played college ball, including Chris Jr. went to NC State. How did he get the 13 off the out of the rafters though?
Interesting enough, at NC State, we've got about 15 jerseys that are in the rafters, and I'm fortunate enough to be one of those. But we have, of those 15, 14 are honored jerseys, and there's only one retired, and that's David Thompson. They set the bar extremely high. Get your jersey retired. You have to win a national championship and be player of the year. And that's something David Thompson did back in 74. But so my son played there for 4 years. And it was a great experience. My second son went to the University of South Carolina and walked on there with Frank Martin. And Frank and I grew up together in Miami, so I've always had a great relationship with Frank. And, you know, they just enjoyed being around the game. And, my son at South Carolina, that's the one you really need to have on the podcast, because the stories he can tell you about Frank Martin, it's hard to believe. But, so they've had a nice career with that. I have a daughter that goes to the University of Alabama, and then my youngest son is a senior in high school.
You played on some incredible NC State teams, a team that should have won the championship in 1989, but we won't go down that road. But you're playing for with the great teammates that you played with, and Charles Shackelford and Gugliotta and Vinny Del Negro, all led by Jimmy V. I mean, playing for Jimmy V must have been a thrill and an honor for you, Chris. What can you tell us about your experience with him?
I tell you, he was just so special. You know, he had, you know, obviously charisma. And, he was on the cutting edge of everything. This was back when, you know, a lot of coaches didn't have any endorsements. And, you know, he kind of led that charge. He was, you know, he was on Johnny Carson. You know, this was well before any coaches were on any talk shows. And but just being around him, you know, what was amazing. He was the kind of guy that, you know, you see certain guys that walk into a room and they try to capture everybody's attention. And Jimmy V just had a knack. You know, he had an infectious laugh. He was a great storyteller. And I truly feel he was an underrated coach. You know, he would always change defenses. And, you know, our preparation probably wasn't as good because he was so busy doing so many other things on the outside. But you got him in a game. And his saying was, if you keep it close in the last 4 minutes, you know, I'll win the game for you. And you ended up believing in everything that he said. And, you know, I guess the biggest thing about Jimmy V is, you know, people know about his flair and his charisma, but he was the most intelligent person that I ever was around. He knew a little bit about Shakespeare and, you know, all the different wars and the stock market and opera. He was so well-rounded and versed on so many different areas. And that's the thing that, you know, his life was cut short, that a lot of people didn't get to see just how special he was outside of basketball. And, you know, his legacy now is probably bigger than it was while he was living. And, you know, I just feel very honored that basketball has been so special to me, and it's put me in front of so many people. And, you know, having the opportunity to play for Jimmy V was probably the best experience that basketball gave me.
That's great.
Now, you grew up in a family of basketball coaches and players. Your father, right, was your high school coach at Miami Hialeah Lakes, and had a tremendous record there. How did you not wind up, Chris? I want to ask you, we want to get into what you're doing now, but how did you wind up not making a career out of the game of basketball, in coaching or in some other form?
Well, you know, first of all, I always say, you know, when I finished playing, basketball coaches weren't making a whole lot of money. If I would have known how much money they're making now, I would have at least tried that lane. When I finished playing, you know, I again played 2 years in Orlando and one with the Celtics, and then eight. I had played 11 years, and I was really traveling every year. You know, I wasn't fortunate enough to be like Jeff Turner, who was in one place for a long time, but I was ready to settle down, and I had an opportunity to be an assistant coach for Eddie Biedenbach at UNC Asheville right away. And I wanted to get into business, and I wanted my kids to kind of have roots in one place. And I knew that if I got into coaching, I was going to be, you know, a couple years as an assistant here and there. And, you know, I basically did that for 11 years. So I just kind of planted my roots in Raleigh, and, you know, I've just enjoyed Raleigh, being around the school, and you know, kind of led my way into the business world.
I don't blame you. I think that's a good move. If I was Chris Corciani, I'd be as close to Raleigh as possible too. I think that's you can't go. I would imagine tremendous.
Do you pay for a meal in town, Chris?
Exactly.
You pay.
It's funny, George. You know, years ago I didn't, but the older you get, they tend to forget.
It's the damn millennials, Chris. I tell you, that's what
come
happens.
On. They not forgetting fire and ice back in. No way. Come on now.
You know what's interesting?
Rodney Monroe, right? Was it Rodney Monroe?
It was Rodney. Yeah. I stay in touch with him. Rodney sends Tom Gugliotta and I a text every day with a prayer. So it's kind of our way of staying in touch. I joke and I say he probably knows I need it a whole lot, so he does it every day.
How is it watching your kids play? Do you find yourself? I'm always fascinated if you're up and vocal and really into it, or you sit back, reserved? Or what's your vantage point when you're watching your kids play?
You know, Dante, I've never enjoyed it. You know,
okay.
I just never enjoyed it, and I was the father that sat back, didn't say a word. You know, even after the games, you know, if they wanted to talk about it, I talked about it. You know, being in Raleigh, you know, they had a lot of pressure on them, and people would say, you know, are you like your father? And so I really tried to kind of downplay all that and always supportive, always there for them, but like to kind of be in the background, you know, with that. And I got so nervous that it really wasn't enjoyable because I wanted them to do so well. And they were, you know, very nice players, you know, especially at the high school level, but no, I was not one of those vocal fathers that was you know, getting on them or getting on the coach. You know, I really tried to take a back seat there.
So you should have done what I did, Chris. My girls, they refused to play basketball for that very reason. But they got into soccer and volleyball, which was great because I had no clue what was happening in the game and everything. So if you don't know what's going on, you can't get nervous about it, right? You just
right. That worked out well. Yeah, they were like, we're gonna pick a sport Dad doesn't know anything about.
Exactly.
Smart girl. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, girl.
Well, so what are you doing now, Chris?
Yeah, what are you doing now, Chris?
What are you involved with now?
Well, I got into real estate right when I was finishing playing and ended up, I was at an NC State basketball game and a guy came up to me at halftime and tapped me on my shoulder and he said, how would you like to buy a mortgage company? And I turned to him and I said, I'm at the concession stand. I want to buy a hot dog right now, not a mortgage company. I ended up buying his mortgage company and I ran that for 8 years and sold it about 6 years ago. But I had a title insurance company that was running alongside the mortgage company. And 2 weeks ago, I just sold that title insurance company. I've got to work for 3 more years. But so I've been in the real estate kind of world, you know, in the North Carolina area.
See, Dante, that's I would great. Think that would be if I lived in Raleigh and I bought a house from Chris Corciani, I'd be telling everybody.
Exactly. Exactly right.
That'd be amazing.
You know, I've told a lot of players and NC State's been great to me. And they allow me to come back and talk to the team. And I try to tell those guys that their biggest opportunity is staying in the area because they're known, you know, in basketball, even if you're not a starter. In the Carolinas, it's a craze. Everybody loves, you know, Carolina Duke or NC State. And I say your best opportunity is staying in the area. Don't go back to Vicksburg, Mississippi, where there's not a lot going on. And it's been fun to see some of the younger NC State players that have gotten into business. And I love mentoring them and helping them. But, yeah, there is some advantages and perks to playing there and taking advantage of your name. And, you know, I wish that I had that NIL stuff, you know.
Yes, no doubt.
It's been a great experience being there.
What are your thoughts on the state of the game today?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you keep up with the NBA game? Do you watch it? And what are your thoughts?
I know you're a big college fan, right?
Yeah.
Big college fan. College fan.
I love college and obviously I go to all the NC State games. And I'm a big NBA fan I'm a huge Magic fan. You know, I had such a great experience in Orlando and the opportunity that they gave me. So I'm a huge Magic fan. You know, the college game, it's different. The kids nowadays, you know, they're pampered at such a young age. So, but when they get there, it's different. But the game, you know, it's obviously changed. There's great athletes. And, you know, to be honest with you, I was a 6 foot point guard. And you look at a lot of rosters now, you know, on the collegiate level, you know, the point guards now are 6'3" and they're great scorers and they're playing above the rim. So the game, I think, has really changed, you know, from 35 years ago. And, you know, just great athletes, you know, but it's still a fun game. I still love the NCAA tournament with the, you know, you lose and you're done. And, But, you know, the NBA is fun. It's fun seeing the younger players transition and, you know, take over the league. So it's been a good experience.
As great as you were in high school, can you imagine playing at a time when there's the social media, Twitter, can you imagine if two-time Mr. Basketball in the state of Florida in a world of social media would have been insane for you?
Yeah, that was, not having that, I'm happy and blessed because, I mean, there's so many distractions now for these kids. And, I remember, we would read the paper and that was kind of everything. Yeah. You know, the Orlando Sentinel would kind of tell you how you were doing. But, you know, these kids nowadays with, social media and the ones that are reading it, you know, they're getting bogged down, whether somebody's saying they're doing great or not, or it's just another distraction that I'm thrilled that I didn't have to put up with, back in the day.
You know, and I got to think, Chris, when you were on the bus trips, right? Weren't you talking and telling stories? Now everybody's on their phones, right? Yeah. And you got a lot of that. Think about, right? I imagine you guys told some great stories sitting on, then you get Shaquille O'Neal, right? You're listening, you're laughing. I imagine there were some great bonds that were built with your teammates without social media.
Yeah, no question. I remember playing cards, on the bus. I forget what game it was called, but David and Jeff and
Liar's Poker.
Going, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
a lot of Liar's Poker.
Hopefully, you guys are still playing that a little bit. But
we gave it. Unfortunately, that was a Bobby Weiss introduced that to the group, and that caught fire, and we played a lot of that back in the days.
I do remember that. I remember being on the losing end of that quite a bit, but.
Acres was the worst liar.
Not as much as Acres, though.
Acres was the worst liar.
Speaking of Acres, one of my most memorable kind of memories of the Orlando Magic was going on road trips. And I was the rookie. I think Jeff and Scott, they called me Rook. I don't even know if they really knew my name. The beauty
Jeff didn't, just so you know, Jeff didn't today either. I have to remind you.
We would go on these road trips and we'd get to a city and Jeff, Scott, Mark, some of the other folks, we'd go out to these nice restaurants. And again, I didn't have two nickels to rub together. And my job was to get the cab. This is before Uber. So we'd be in the restaurant, the bill would come. They would all take care of it for me, but that's Rook cool. Had to go get the cab. So if we were in Milwaukee, I'd be out there in the 10 degrees weather trying to hail a cab, but I didn't have to pay for the meal. They always picked up my meal. So
that's awesome.
The memorable moments of going out and being around those guys.
I think because you joined us mid-season, you really didn't have to sing or anything like that, did you? I don't remember.
I don't.
Too much hazing going on other than the cab rides.
Yeah, I don't remember too much hazing, but yeah, the cab rides. That's what I always hoped that they were going to pick a restaurant that was close to the hotel, so that was more expensive than the meal.
But yeah, that's right. That's right. Now we have to pay for Jeff's meal and get the cab. That's the deal that he has.
Jeff was always one of those guys just always able to figure it out. There was always an angle away. But
he hadn't changed.
I always tell people I made good money while I was playing and I still got it all.
I can believe that.
I still got it all. Now, I got to imagine, Chris, my wife and I went to Italy for our 1-year anniversary and they saw the name Marcatelli. They started speaking Italian and they were crushed when I didn't know the language. Right. So I imagine, did you pick it up pretty quickly? And I imagine Accorciani playing in Italy was pretty popular.
I was fortunate in high school, instead of taking Spanish or French, I took Italian. So I had a good little background with that. My great grandparents spoke Italian in the house. And so I picked up that as well. So when I went over there, it did come very easily to me. Unfortunately, I went from Italy to Spain, and then I picked up Spanish. So now when I go over there, it's kind of a mixture between Italian and Spanish. But like Jeff said, I know enough to kind of be able to order food and get around. So that's been good. I ended up getting my Italian citizenship. And that was very beneficial, where I had dual citizenship. So when I went over there after a couple of years, I was able to play as a Italian player, and I didn't take up one of the two spots that was filled by the Americans. So it really gave me a little bit of longevity over there playing.
Now that's all changed. It's just completely open. And, you know, a lot of the teams are made up of many, many players from different countries. What city were you in over there, Chris?
I was in Siena. I was in Treviso. I actually played with Tony Kukoc before he came to the Bulls. And, you know, my story there with Tony was he was so excited and he wanted to get to Chicago, and he was chomping at the bit. And we were playing Kinder Bologna in the championship. And the way a lot of contracts are structured over in Europe is you do have a base salary, but it's very incentive laden. And if we would have won the championship, it was going to be more than my whole kind of year's salary. And Tony didn't want to play. And Tony checked out, and we ended up, you know, losing the first couple games. And I said, Tony, listen, I know you want to get to Chicago, but, you know, I got a lot of money riding on this, and I got a fan.
Yeah.
Ended up winning the next two games, and he was miserable and didn't want to be there. And we got beaten the third, and he left on the first flight in the morning to Chicago. I said, that's bad.
Oh, boy. Chris, I remember Daryl Armstrong played overseas before he arrived with the Magic. I remember one story he tells about a game in Greece. I think it might have been the last game he played there. And somebody set the building on fire. And, you know, there was smoke everywhere. And just the crowds were just crazy. Did you have any crazy incidents like that playing in Europe at that time?
Absolutely. It's barbaric. I mean, a lot of people. I mean, it's when I was in Turkey, I played for a team called FS Pilsen, and I didn't realize the history between the Turks and the Greeks. And so when a Turkish team plays a Greek team, it's much more than a basketball game. It's going back in years, and family members have been killed in wars, and you play and they're constantly throwing things, you know, at you during the game, and I was trying to tell them, listen, I'm an American, I'm not Turkish. I just happen to be playing for the enemy. But it really is, you know, there's times where it's very dangerous, you know, the things they throw, and you know, those games, again, it's very deep rooted. I got a quick story about Daryl Armstrong. Daryl was on the Raleigh Bullfrogs with me, you know, before I got caught up with the Magic, and Monty Tau was the head coach. And Monty Tau tells this story better than anyone, but I was the local hero that went to NC State, and, you know, in Raleigh, in order to sell a few tickets, I had to play. And Daryl kept going to Monty, he was my backup point guard, saying, why am I getting no playing time? And Monty said it was the most difficult thing to tell him, listen, you know, wait your turn, you know, this and that. He said, Daryl was so much better than me, but I was playing 48 minutes. And he said, it was very, very hard to tell this guy,
wow,
listen, you know, Chris is playing well. And he said, I wasn't even, no comparison who was better, but I had to play you. So it was funny. And to think that he was my backup and then had a, you know, amazing career, you know, many years with the Magic.
Wow. I had never heard that story.
I didn't either. That's wonderful. Awesome. What we know about Daryl, I bet he made your life miserable in practice, didn't he?
You know, I say the one thing I could do is kind of get the ball up the court.
Yeah.
And there's two players that I could never get the ball up the court against. And one was Daryl Armstrong and the other was Muggsy Bogues. And it was just a nightmare. And that was the one thing I took pride on. Listen, I can figure it out and get the ball up the half court and get a team in the set. But those two, you know, were just amazing. I remember playing Charlotte, and, you know, Coach Gukas said, listen, give the ball to Nick Anderson. Let him bring it up when you're in the game.
That's awesome. Fantastic.
And Daryl was a North Carolina guy, too. Now, yeah. Daryl was a Gastonia, North Carolina.
Fayetteville State.
Yeah.
Did you play with Luis Scola, too? Did you win a championship with him? I think about that. He's still playing. I mean, that you must be – absolutely amazed by that. What do you remember about him?
When I was in Spain, we had a tremendous team. you know, Lewis Scola was about an 18-year-old, but just a tremendous talent. Fabricio Oberto, who ended up playing with the San Antonio Spurs for a number of years, was on the team. And Andres Nicioni, who played, you know, a number of years, you know, those were all, the Bulls. You know, they were 18, 19 years old. And we ended up winning the championship in Spain. And we had Victor Alexander that played with the Warriors for a while. And Elmer Bennett was a tremendous European player. He had a few cups of coffee in the NBA. But yeah, that was amazing. Those three guys to see where they were and then what they did, you know, when they went over to the NBA was just, you know, fun to watch them.
All right, last thing, Chris, because I got to get your thoughts on this. With all that you've accomplished and as terrific a point guard as you were, when you see that position now at this level with the likes of Steph Curry and James Harden, I mean, what do you think? What goes through your mind when you see what is asked of the point guard position now?
Well, you know, fortunate for me, I was the backup point guard. So a lot of times I matched up against the backup point guard. Having to chase those guys, I mean, what those guys do night in and night out is just amazing. And, you know, every time I watch a guy like Curry, it's like I keep saying, is he that good? Can he do that again? You know, it's amazing. And again, I mentioned earlier, you know, these guards are big and strong, and you know, there's not a weakness. You know, I remember playing against Mark Price, and you know, I don't think Matty could get me out fast enough, because a lot of you would pick your poison. You say, okay, this guy's not a great shooter, and I'll give him a step, or this guy is you know, wanting to do this. But you know, a guy like Mark Price back in the day, it didn't matter if you were up on him, he was going to go around you. Behind, you know, he's going to knock it down. But every player now is just so talented. It's amazing, you know, the progression over the years of, you know, that point guard position is it's different. You know, you had point guards back years ago that really were what they call playmakers. Nowadays, a point guard position is a scorer, and you know, so that has changed dramatically.
What's the maddest Jeff ever got at you when you didn't give him the ball in the right spot?
Yeah, like Jeff wanted the ball. I will tell you that. Very, very into his shot. But, you know, like you said, when he was picking and popping, if he was open, he certainly would, hey, you know, you missed me that time. But you know,
that's great.
In all seriousness, Jeff and Scott and those guys, you know, they you know, you get to certain teams and you're on your own. And Jeff, the reason I lived in Winter Park was because Jeff and Didi, they were so helpful. And, you know, I was so fortunate. And a lot of that is why I still really embrace the Magic, because the experience, not only with the fans, but with the team and, you know, was really special. And you don't get that, you know, every team you get to, you know, doesn't welcome you and help you and mentor you. And I was very fortunate to have some veterans that really did a wonderful job.
You'll Chris, never be forgotten either, Chris. Congratulations on your career, basketball and business.
Well, hey, real quick, I just want to get your take on this. Dante interviewed Jerry Reynolds at our last game, and Ice kind of referred to David and I as a couple of old pieces of furniture that are still around the Magic.
He didn't kind of refer to it. He said those guys are like two pieces of furniture.
Yeah. What's your take on that, Chris? You know, I know you said earlier that you weren't lucky enough to be in one place all the time. And I was like, I always thought that was a positive, and now I'm thinking I'm just like an old recliner.
But are you asking Chris what type of furniture you are? Like, are you a couch? Are you a table?
The old sofa that's losing the stuffing, and the pillows are falling apart, and the dog sleeps on it.
To me, George, they're like French antiques. You know,
there you go.
They just, you know, but they age, but they get better with age.
Nice.
Oh, there we go.
Nice. Very nice. I like that one. There we go.
On your business card, boys.
That's better than the way I phrased it last night.
That's good.
That doesn't surprise me.
But I called him a couple of rocking chairs myself, so I apologize for that. Chris, this has been a blast. We'd love to see you in Raleigh. And please, anytime you come down to Central Florida, come be our guest, spend some time with us. We'd love to have you back.
I'd love it. I appreciate y'all having me on. This has been really, really fun.
This has been awesome. And we got some new stories, fellas. This is fantastic. I thought that was great.
Terrific. Appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.
Special thanks to Chris Cortiani. That'll do it for Magic Pod Squad. We'll see you next time.